Well, like Ryan said, Linda and I, this is my wife Linda, and we were married here 40 years ago, and I actually sang to her as she walked down the aisle, and I thought I did pretty good until I listened to the tape later on, and my voice was all over the place. And the reason I ended up in LA is because of John and Jill. John and Jill and I did a training school in YWAM together back in the day. So, you know, when you're old, you can say back in the day, right? So then they recruited me to come here and joined YWAM here at YWAM Los Angeles. And we led training schools when John and Jill went to Southeast Asia. One of the schools I led, there was a guy called John DeBenko. John, raise your hand there. Okay, John saw that I put online that I was going to be here, and he lives in Pasadena. Anyway, it's great to see you again, bro. He was in one of the schools. The thing I remember about John DeBenko is we're on outreach in Mexico, and we were playing soccer. And the next day, I was going to preach in this church, and I went to head a ball and met John's knee coming up, and it hit me right in the nose. Remember this, honey?
Yeah, he's carrying me back.
John was carrying me, and I looked like a raccoon. The next day, I had two black eyes, and I preached anyway. So, but it is good to be here with you. I know that you've been through a lot, and you know, I think some things are past finding out, right? If you try and figure exhaustively everything and why things happen and where's God in the midst of it, we never get to the end of that journey, because some things are still mysteries, but there are many things that are not. And so as your pastor said, we went through a tragic event that took place at our YWAM base. And out of that, I began to study the issue of God and suffering. Where is God when we suffer? And I want to talk to you about part of that, but let me tell you the story, okay? So the whole first part of this is what happened to us. So we live in Denver. We went out of YWAM Los Angeles to Pioneer, the base in Denver, Colorado. It was in winter. It was in December. It had been snowing for a few hours. I'd been asleep. We'd been asleep for maybe a couple of hours. Suddenly, we're awakened by someone pounding on our front door and ringing the doorbell incessantly. And so from our bedroom and the landing outside our bedroom is a two-story house. You can see the front door. And as I stumbled out of bed and onto the landing, I could see my son, our son, Stephen, was at the front door. He was opening the door. In came two of our YWAMers, and one of them spoke out a phrase I'll never forget. He said, there's been a shooting at the base. And I was trying to kind of wrap my mind around what that meant when our daughter Rachel, so we have three children, Stephen, Rachel, and Jessica, and Rachel came out of her bedroom, and she said, "Dad, it's Tiffany," and she said some other names. So I ran back into the bedroom, threw some clothes on, went out to my car on the street. There's about maybe 5 or 6 inches of snow on the car. Brushed it off as best we could. If you've ever lived in a snowy climate, actually, it's hard to do. But Colorado, the snow is powdery when it falls, and so you could actually just brush it off. And so brushed off the snow, jumped in the car. Our youngest daughter was up at our mountain campus, Eagle Rock. We have two main campuses in Denver. And we drove over to the base 4 blocks away. And when we arrived, it was like something out of a movie scene. There were ambulances and police cars, and everything was kind of shining off of the freshly fallen snow. And the front of our driveway was cordoned off with yellow police tape. And as I stopped at the entrance, a policeman came out in a SWAT uniform and pointed a rifle right at me. And I rolled the window down and I said, I'm the director here. And he said, I don't care, get out of here. So I saw I wasn't going to be able to reason with him. So backed out, drove across the street to this parking lot. And as we're sitting there, just kind of thinking, okay, what should we do? I get a call from Linda. And she says, they're taking them to St. Anthony's. St. Anthony's is a hospital, a large trauma hospital about 15 minutes from us. So she said, swing by and pick me up. So I drove to her house. We drove together down to St. Anthony's. As we came into the emergency room, the chaplain on duty recognized us, I guess, and he came up and he said, here, come with me. He took us back. By that time, we'd heard that four of our staff had been shot. Charlie, one of our staff members, 22-year-old young man, was there. He was alive. He'd been shot in the legs. He kind of filled in some more of the story for us. The other person was Tiffany Johnson. Tiffany was our hospitality coordinator. And the chaplain said that when Tiffany was being brought in, she was giving a description of the shooter to the paramedics. And I thought, you know, she was the only girl that was shot. There were four that were shot, three guys, and Tiffany. So I thought, I'm going to call her mom and dad. It's a phone call I wish I'd never made. I remember her dad's words. He said, well, Tiff's a fighter, and I know that if she was alert and giving descriptions of the shooter, she's going to make it. She didn't. She died. The paramedics didn't realize that one of the bullets had grazed the vena cava, and she was bleeding internally the whole time. And she went into cardiac arrest and died on the operating table. The other person who died was Phil Krause, one of our staff from Alaska. And Dan, Tiffany's boyfriend, got shot in the neck. Miraculously, it missed his windpipe and jugular vein and spinal cord, and Dan survived. So four of them were shot and two passed away. We didn't know who had done this at that point, but then a phone call came in from a friend of mine who's a pastor in Denver. He pastors a church in the city, Phil Abeda. And normally Phil is a very jovial, friendly guy, but I could tell something was wrong. His voice was cracking and trembling, and then he said this. He said, Peter, the shooter was my nephew. He said he did YWAM a few years ago, but he grew up in a Christian family, but he really became bitter at God and struggled with being accepted by God and others, and then he is the one who went to Colorado Springs and did the same thing. Well, we had heard the next day a shooter, they thought it was a copycat shooter to begin with, had gone to Colorado Springs and done the same thing at a church there. And he said, it was my nephew who did this too. His name was Matthew. Matthew's mother, Loretta, told me later on, she said, Matthew just couldn't seem to forgive people when he felt like they had hurt him somehow. He just couldn't let go of those offenses. And that's what drove him to become bitter at God and other people. Well, Matthew had gone out and he'd bought guns and ammunition. I'm going to grab my phone. Can I just read you? He had... He bought he had 2,000 rounds of ammunition. His plan was actually to commit a massacre. He had a Bushmaster XM-15. He had a semi-automatic 9mm handgun, even an AK-47 assault rifle. He arrived at YWAM a little before midnight. We didn't see this, but he posted online. He said, this is what he wrote. He said, "You Christians are all going to die. You're to blame for most of the problems in the world. I feel no remorse, no sense of shame. I don't care if I live or die in the shootout." And then maybe you remember one of the high school shootings. One of the first large ones was Columbine High School. It's in the same area in which we live, same general vicinity. And he said, "Christian America, this is your Columbine." He had explanatory notes on how to survive a tactical shooting, and he even had video of the inside of our YWAM facility. He arrived late at night. This was the evening of our Christmas love feast, we call it in YWAM, our Christmas party. Of course, when you got 18 to 25-year-olds and they're all amped up, they can't go to bed, you know, the Christmas celebration ended about 9 o'clock, so some of them went out bowling, others went to a concert, and the doors were locked because it was after hours, and one of the students, her name is Stephanie, she'd stayed back, and she saw someone outside knocking on the door, and she opened the door, and it was Matthew, and she didn't recognize him. And he said, "It's okay, I have permission to stay for the night. Linda Warren gave me permission." So Stephanie said, "Oh, okay." It was a lie, of course. His plan was to wait until everyone was asleep and then go and shoot as many people as possible. We had 60 staff and students in that one dormitory building. You know, whenever there's tragedy, you go, "God, why, God, why did these things happen? Why didn't you cause him to slide off the road in the snowstorm? And, you know, or something, why didn't you keep this from happening?" I mean, these are real questions that people have. And I found especially young people really struggle with God's justice and his love. And why do innocent people suffer? Stephanie said, "Wait a minute, and let me go find Tiffany." She couldn't find Tiffany. Tiffany had gone to spend the night with a friend. But a friend was coming down with a cold, and a friend said, "Hey, why don't you go back to the base?" And she came back, and Stephanie then saw Tiffany and said, "There's this guy who says he has permission to stay here." And so Tiffany said to him, "You can't stay for the night." And he said, "Well, I have permission. Linda Warren gave me permission to stay for the night." And Tiffany said this. And our police chief, in his last public statement about the shootings, he said, "Tiffany saved many lives." Because what she did saved many lives, but it cost her own life. She said, "Well, I'm not going to call Linda after midnight now and wake her up. And she didn't say anything to me, so I'm sorry, but you can't stay the night." Escorted Matthew to the side door, and Dan, her boyfriend, went along with her and two of the other guys. They opened the door. He went out. They turned around, and he pulled out a 9mm pistol and fired 15 rounds, and 9 of them into Tiffany. And then went to reload, and his foot must have slipped. It's the only thing we can figure out because the door shut and locked him out. And as God is my witness, this door, a large industrial door on the edge of our property, we'd had it fixed several times, but it always developed the same endemic problem, and it just wouldn't close all the way. And you had to give it a tug before it would actually lock. But on this night, the door that would never shut, and locked him out. And the guys that showed up at our house, they were coming back from a concert, and as they turned in the parking lot, the light shone on the door, and they could see him looking through the security glass and trying to get back in. And when he saw them, he ran. The police arrived less than 2 minutes from the first 911 call. They'd learned from Columbine not to set up a perimeter, but just to go in and not give the perpetrator more time to plan the next move. And so they went in, they found staff and students hiding under beds and in closets and just terrified, rounded everybody up and took us all down to the police station, interrogated everybody all night. They weren't sure if anyone was in collusion with the shooter. The next day, the shooting at New Life happened. New Life is a church in Colorado Springs. Matthew had fled through the neighborhood. All of the dogs were inside because of the sub-freezing temperatures, and got to his car, drove home, stayed the night, drove to Colorado Springs the next day. And as he was coming into the foyer, actually Jack Hayford was preaching at New Life that Sunday, was up in his office with the pastor, Brady Boyd, and this security guard, I talked to this security guard, Jean was her name, and she said, I'd been fasting for 3 days, and the Lord told me to bring my weapon to church. And when she saw people running and the gunshots, she ran toward him, confronted him. He didn't stop. She shot him several times, and then he took his own life. You know, why? Why do things like this happen? And that was the question we always ask, right, when there's tragedy, is, God, why? And like I mentioned earlier, sometimes there are no good answers. Paul said the ways of God are past finding out. But there are some answers to these things. And at the time, I had an opportunity to write this book, and the Lord just closed the doors to do that. And so I went to the Lord, and clearly he didn't want me to write about it. And then a few years ago, I felt the Lord say, I want you to write the story again, but I don't want the focus of the book to be the story. I just want that to be the backdrop. But I want you to talk about my character in the midst of suffering. Where is God when we suffer? And so in the book, I actually take 10 different sources of suffering and what the scriptures have to tell us about each one of those. And so I want to talk about one of those this morning. So that's the backdrop. But one of the sources of suffering that doesn't relate directly to the shootings per se, but relates to what you've walked through, and I think all of us, to some extent, we've walked through loved ones passing away. Let me share from this chapter where I talk about physical death. You may not agree with this, and that's fine. Let me share my conviction. And my conviction is that God originally did not plan for man to die. This wasn't plan A. That his desire, as far as we can tell, was for us to live in a beautiful place created by him, in relationship with him and one another, and even the animal kingdom on earth. So just think of how the Bible describes the beginning. So in the Garden of Eden, there were fountains that came up from the deep. Genesis 2, verse 6 through 8 tells us. A mist came down and fountains came from below and watered the earth. There were animals who were not afraid of man in any way. Genesis 2, 19. There were no weeds or thorn bushes on earth. Genesis 2, verse 5 tells us that all plants were edible to begin with. And the biggest amazing thing was there was no sickness or death because of a tree that God had put in the middle of the garden. Whether that was a actual literal tree or however it was, it was a life-giving tree that God had put there, Genesis 2:9. And if ever someone started to feel ill, they could eat the fruit of this tree or make a tea from its leaves. We know that because later on in Revelation it says that the leaves are for the healing of the nations, because God actually didn't destroy the tree. Okay, he just moved it to a different location and he moved us out of its reach. But this tree, just the very name, speaks to this fact that it was a tree of life that would generate life within us so that we would never die. Probably it wasn't God's plan for us to stay in the garden. This was just a model, and we were to populate the whole earth, right? And make the rest of the earth like this beautiful garden. But death wasn't part of the equation because of this tree of life. There was another tree in the garden, Genesis 2:17, that was off limits to man. It was a forbidden tree called the tree... What's the name of that tree? Tree of the knowledge of good and evil. If man ate from this tree, he would become the expert and replace God as the one who knew what he was talking about. And man would be the one who would decide what was right and wrong and good and evil. And we see it played out today, even to the point where we've begun calling things that God calls evil good and vice versa. God never wanted us to eat from that tree, but that eating from that tree came with a price tag, and the price tag was a death. And when Adam and Eve ate from that tree, death came to the entire human race. Roger Forster, a British theologian, wrote a book called God's Strategy in Human History, one of the most incredible books I've ever read. But I'll read you a little excerpt. He said, God could have kept Adam and Eve from sinning by removing their ability to choose. The trouble with that is that a robot cannot show love. Only a free being with an independent will can love. If love was to be a meaningful thing, Adam and Eve had to be allowed some form of free choice. God allowed them the freedom to choose wrongly, but nothing indicates that he wanted them to do so. This was the issue and the suffering that happened to us at our base. Is God gave Matthew Murray the freedom to choose. You know, for love to be real, it must be possible to choose against it, right? And so he was created for a love relationship with God. He chose against it because of his selfishness. So eating from that tree really mess things up for the human race, for all the future generations that were to be born on the earth. How is that fair? How is it fair that we suffer as a result of Adam and Eve's sin? Well, we'll get to that in a second. Here are some of the consequences of our sin. It separated us from God. Immediately, Adam and Eve were hiding from God. Genesis 3, verse 8. Isaiah 59:2 says that sin separates us from God. So there was a separation between us and him. Another consequence was that God cursed the ground. He could have wiped us out altogether, but he cursed the ground. How is that a loving thing? Well, just think about it for a moment. One could make the case that actually it was the most loving thing because God wanted to make it more difficult for us to farm and get food from the ground. Immediately when we sinned, weeds and thorn bushes came up. And because here's the thing, when we have a lot of free time on our hands, we tend to use it selfishly and use it to sin. With all the advances in computer science and robotics, we're seeing this again today. When we have time on our hands, human nature tends to gravitate towards sin. And I think maybe part of God's motive here is that he wanted to make it more difficult for us to get food from the ground so we would be occupied. But whether or not that was the main reason, God cursed the ground. But the big thing was this. We were banished from the garden. Genesis 3:23. Without the tree of life, these bodies can't survive. They're going to die. Eventually, you know, they're going to start to get brittle and you're going to lose your hair, or it's going to go gray and you're going to get wrinkles. And we have a nice way of saying it. It's called aging. Okay, but aging is basically your body is starting to get to the end. And if you don't die of a heart attack or an aneurysm, you're eventually going to die of cancer, right? All of us have cancer, right? Dr. Oz points out we all have cancer cells in our bodies, and eventually our lives are going to expire. I don't believe this was God's original intent, but it's the result of us living with sin. So Romans 5:12 tells us the domino effect of sin. You know, the domino effect, you push over one domino and the next one, and it says, through one man sin entered the world, the next domino, and death through his sin, and this death has spread to all mankind. So are there exceptions? Yes, two of them that we know about, Enoch, who didn't taste death, and Elijah, who was taken up by a whirlwind. But unless God makes another exception, we're all going to die. We're all in the process of dying, right? From the moment we're born, we're dying. But it wasn't what God wanted, and I think he's more grieved than us when it happens. Someone said to me, but what about healing? I mean, God heals people, right? How many have seen a physical healing where God actually healed someone? It's incredible. But even so, even those who are healed are going to die, right? If not, we'd have some godly 500-year-old couples here at church. But we don't, because the weight of sin is too great. I mean, not just the fact that we all sin, but just sin coming into the world is the result. There was another event that took place, a worldwide event that actually kind of accelerated this proclivity for our bodies to give out, and it was the flood. So leading up to that time, or basically before this time, there was living on Earth this mutant life form born out of... I guess you could say that the sexual relationship between fallen angels and human women that gave birth to this quasi-human, quasi-angel race of beings called the Nephilim. And this grieved God so much because it was corrupting God's original plan for each species to multiply according to its own kind. That was God's plan. But also it was sabotaging his intent that we would reflect the image of who he was. And so he brought this flood upon the earth. And after the flood, each successive generation lived less than the one before. Whereas people were living 700, 800, 900 years, then just barely over 100. Also, something interesting is that prior to the flood, there were no natural disasters that came from precipitation. Have you ever thought of that? So every natural disaster that comes from tsunamis and hurricanes and hail and droughts didn't exist in the garden because there was no rain. This came after. It's all a result, this domino effect of sin that impacted the physical world as well as our human bodies. And that's where we find ourselves today. And it breaks God's heart. But he didn't just leave it at that, right? And this is what we know. Death isn't the end of the story. It's just the beginning of a new chapter. Revelation 21:4. Says, and there'll be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying, nor pain. And verse 5 says, and behold, I'm going to make all things new, including the redemption of these bodies. We're not just going to be spirits, but we're going to have new bodies, probably reflecting the bodies we were originally intended to have. I can't wait to see how incredible you guys are going to look. You know, no zits or no cancer, no arthritis, hair in all the right places. I mean, seriously, God is going to make all things new again, including our physical bodies. Romans 8:23 talks about the redemption of our bodies. Romans 8:23, and that word, if you look it up, the word for redemption is the word apolutrosis. And apolutrosis means something held captive and then set free to be what it was originally meant to be. That's the word redemption there. But for now, we're living with the consequences of sin. And we're in a fallen world. But God, who is a redeemer, who loves us, has promised to restore everything that was damaged in the fall. Is it fair that some people live a long life? My dad just passed away a few months ago, but he lived a long life. My mom died much younger. We have the events I told you about where people have the ability to hurt other people through their selfish acts. We live in a world that is broken. But I read this story years ago, and I want to just close by, well, I'll tell you the story and read the last part. It happened 100 years ago. There was a missionary and his wife returning from Africa, and I grew up on the mission field in South America, but we'd go back to Australia every 3 or 4 years. Back then, you stayed for decades. In fact, some missionaries prior to that would actually pack their belongings in a coffin because they knew when they came back, they'd be coming back in the coffin. They were called one-way missionaries. But this missionary, this is only a little over 100 years ago. He and his wife had been in Africa for 40 years. They're on their way back to the United States, and they just so happened to be on the same ship that the recently retired President of the United States was on the ship, Theodore Roosevelt. And he was coming back from British East Africa. He'd been there on a safari for a year, hunting animals, and they're on the same ship. And as the ship pulls into New York Harbor, there's a band there on the dock. The mayor of the city is there, and to welcome the president home. But no one was there to welcome the missionary and his wife back. And they felt hurt, especially the man. He felt hurt because he just felt like, God, why did you allow here this man to get all this praise and attention, and we've served you? And he said to his wife, God isn't fair. How can God be just when this is happening? They got off the ship. No one was there to welcome them home. They rented a little apartment in New York City. That night, the man's spirit broke. I can't take this anymore, he said to his wife. God isn't fair. We don't even know anyone who can help us or where we should go. If God is truly faithful, why hasn't he met our needs? Well, why don't you ask him, his wife said. Praise God for godly wives that speak the truth. Go and ask him then. All right, I will, said the man. And then he went into the bedroom to pray. After some time, he emerged a different man. What happened? Asked his wife. What came over you? What has come over you? Well, he said, the Lord settled it with me. I knelt beside the bed and poured out my heart to him. I told him how bitter I was that the president received this tremendous homecoming. But there was no one here to meet us when we returned home. And when I finished, it seemed as though the Lord put his hand on my shoulder and simply said, but you're not home yet. And that's the ultimate reality, isn't it? That although we live in this world that has been polluted and destroyed because of sin, and not just our sin, but just that original sin from the beginning, and it is hard to say goodbye, but God's heart is broken over this. But this is not the end, right? There's more that he has in store. And God, who is completely just, there'll be some rewards in heaven. There are things that he is going to make right. He already did it by Jesus coming. That's why he was called the second Adam or the last Adam. But through that, gave us the opportunity to live eternally with him. And so, Pastor Ryan, I'm going to hand this back to you. But would you stand with me just for a moment? Lord, we confess to you that we don't understand all the reasons why there's suffering in this world. We know in your word that you say that you're just in all your ways and you show love in everything you do. In Lamentations 3:33, you say that you do not willingly bring grief to anyone. And yet we grieve, Lord, when things are broken and destroyed, and when we realize that there are things we can't figure out. But we want to say, Lord, that we trust in you. And we thank you that you are going to make all things brand new again. You created us for eternity. And we thank you that at the end of your book, we find the tree of life again. Mm-hmm. And it's multiplied because it's on both sides of the river of life. And so we want to hold on to you and say that we trust in you. And for the things we don't understand, Lord, we fix our eyes on you, Jesus. And trust you today.